You're very welcome back to the 9 till noon show here on Highland Radio. Brendan Devaney will join us after 11 a.m. We'll reflect on the Donegal game. Two great provincial finals, I thought, yesterday. Of course, Louth put to bed a lot of demons, I suppose, in lifting the title there in Leinster. It's Leinster, isn't it? I've just had a complete utter brain blank. And of course, Donegal beating Armagh, an exciting game in Clonus. If you have anything to comment on any of those games, but I suppose particularly I'll focus on the Donegal Armagh game, get in touch with us now, 0866 25000. Oisin and Brendan Devaney obviously providing excellent commentary once again. Maybe you've got questions for Brendan about the game or how things panned or how decisions were made and you want his views, get in touch with us and I'll put those questions to you. Regarding regeneration projects, what's happening, Recarn? Done a multi-million euro project announced in 2020. Did we do an interview about that at that time? Was that an exploratory meeting? I can't say. I don't want to contradict anyone. That was 2020. Just a wee note for you, Greg. In March, there was a collision in Letterkenny involving the two Gallagher brothers. That was around St. Patrick's Day. And we know that very, very sadly, Anthony lost his life. But thankfully, I can let you know that Martin has been transferred to Letterkenny University Hospital last week. And I'm told he's recovering well. So any of his friends or neighbours that didn't know that Martin is back, it might be an opportunity to go up and say hello. He is continuing his recovery at Letterkenny University Hospital. And I can only presume that he would love to see some friendly faces. So just letting you know, in case you weren't aware, that he's back closer to home and still coming to terms, I'm sure, with the loss of Anthony. A caller is mentioning blocked sewers in Killybegs resulting from or coinciding with these works that are ongoing. I hadn't heard anything about that, but if you want to talk about that, let me know. Greg, could you highlight this, please? Clún Ard in Killyclog, no water now for a week. It's not good enough. All the taxes we pay and nothing getting fixed for us. Can't shower my kids. We can't even flush toilets. I've been ringing the council all week to receive the same answer all the time and no action. Maybe you might put the pressure on them. Well, we can make an inquiries. I mean, obviously, everybody individually in that area needs to lodge a complaint with Irish Water. There's no point contacting a local council or the local authority. If your water is supplied by Uisce Éireann, then everybody individually needs to contact Uisce Éireann and log a complaint there. And I'm sure you have, don't get me wrong. But what can the council do? I don't know. They can pass it on, but that's only one contact with Uisce Éireann. You need to bombard them with contacts. Hi, Greg. In relation to the car show at the weekend, can we give a mention to the backbone of car dealerships, the very busy and professional motor mechanics? The young lads coming through the apprenticeship scheme here do so on a very basic social welfare payment. They also have to buy all their tools at their own expense. It's the most expensive four-year training scheme for a learner. Can I just say, I know someone who's gone through the scheme with a dealership in Letterkenny. The company have been extremely good to the learner and is now employed full-time. Hope everybody enjoyed it. Yeah, indeed, the weather was fantastic. I was in Letterkenny myself. I didn't get down as far as the car show. I listened to some of the links on the radio, though. And as I say, you know, the weather's the one thing you can't plan for. And the weather held off nicely for it. And I'm sure everybody had a great day. Greg, can you inquire with the council why they did not fit solar panels to the new council houses in Crana, Crescent, Buncrana that have air-to-water heating? I emailed them but never got a reply. I'm not really sure how that works. We can put an inquiry in, of course. I'm not sure every new house gets solar panels. I just don't know how that works. The housing minister is in Donegal today, by the way. He is up meeting councillors, I believe, and also paying a visit to a house affected by defective concrete. There's lots of questions to be asked in that area. This is, I suppose, a fresh copybook to some extent in relation to a new housing minister. He replaced Dara O'Brien, who himself is facing more controversy today, because he made an announcement in relation to government delivery on homes and apparently he didn't consult those around him to ensure that his information was accurate. I think he said 40,000 houses would be delivered in 24 and it turned out there was 30 and a bit. And he was being told the realistic expectation is between 30 and 33,000, I believe, but he went out and said 40. And there's a bit of controversy in relation to that. But anyway, that's his business. I'm hoping to get a word with the new housing minister a little later on. and we'll be putting some questions to him just in relation to the DCB scheme, but I suppose the delivery of housing in Donegal in particular. So if that all goes to plan, I'll hopefully have that for you on the show tomorrow for you to listen to and watch. Right. Could you say hello to Edward Doherty? Edward is in Clonmany and he's 40 today. Happy birthday, Eddie. Taking a day off harvesting peas today and heading for a beer in Bilbao, Spain. Okay, that's all right, isn't it? Enjoy your beer, Edward. Probably 120 a pint or something like that there. Not sure about the harvesting peas reference. I hope that that is not me getting myself into bother and he's a pea farmer. I think it's probably the former than the latter and maybe an in-joke. But anyway, all right, a very familiar sight for many of you would be the Texaco service station in Muff, but unfortunately it is being decommissioned, which is a big blow for the local community, the local economy and those employed there. And of course, the person who owns it, and that is Colin McKenna, owner of Texaco service station Muff. Colin, thanks for joining us. I'm sorry to be talking to you under these circumstances. I'm sure it's the last place you wanted to be, closing the business.
Good morning. Yes, it is. It's sad to be winding something up that's been sort of a habit for so many people and provided so much employment from young people starting out, a lot of them their first jobs, as well as more senior management that worked there for a considerable number of years.
And Colm, how long has the service station been operating in Muff?
Well, I built it in 1999, so it's been operating 25 years.
So you've...
And it's peaked, they had over 50 employees.
Wow. So you've been through the good times and the bad, obviously, and managed to weather those storms. What has changed in terms of, I suppose, business and operating that's led you to this difficult decision?
Well, last year we had operating costs or losses in excess of a six-figure sum. It costs over $100,000 to decommission a site that size. You basically have to fill the tanks with concrete to make them safe, to avoid explosive gases and stuff. Two things, the increase in fuel duties in the south under various guises of carbon tax, etc. It's the cumulative effect of the Green Party's policies. It's affecting the border communities from Cavan, Monaghan, Donegal. And the minimum wage, the effective minimum wage in the south, when you take in all allowances, holiday pay, sickness benefits, etc., the effective cost to an employer in the south is 50% higher than, for instance, my colleagues in Kilmore, which is just over the border there. Mm.
So we've always seen variances, you know, between north and south, but the difference is what we're talking about now is stuff that's locked in. It's not like markets will change and businesses in the Republic will have that benefit for a few years. These are locked in differences that you either can absorb or you can't.
It's not feasible to keep up losses of the extent that we have. Some people may feel that they can hang on to times change. I think the Green Party is a part of the political landscape in the Republic of Ireland, and as a result, there is almost no chance of reductions in fuel duty. That's my call. I wish the best of luck to my other colleagues in the industry.
I know it's too late now, but I think it was Simon Harris I interviewed, and I asked him if he was aware of the decisions that are being made in Dublin, how very badly they can affect border businesses, and the kind of response was along the lines of yes, they are aware, but they have to look at the bigger picture. That being said, the government, and I think Fuels for Ireland had called for this, the government could have targeted some supports to make businesses like yours more likely to survive. You're a victim of these policies, I'm sure you feel.
Well, there was a considerable investment made on the site at the time based on government policies at the time. When Charlie McCreevy was Minister for Finance, which was a long time ago, myself and 10 other border stations, the largest ones, gathered some evidence, and we estimated we were gathering in the region of 320 to 330 million per annum in fuel duty from the northern economy through our stations on behalf of the Irish government.
Well, yeah, well, I mean, that's significant. That's additional taxation that could have been used, I suppose, could have been targeted. Colm, you know how to run a business. You know the margins and you know all the challenges. Do you worry for other service stations that are in border areas? So,
I can only assume that some service stations are prepared to run at a loss and hope that the markets turn around, the government policy turns around again, the decision I've made is to close, and I say I wish the rest of the best luck. I don't see it happen.
Yeah, you don't see them surviving?
I don't see the government supporting them.
I get you, No, I don't
think that Dublin 4 gives a monkey's about Muff, Bridgend, Monaghan. That's about it.
All right, Colm, listen, I'll leave it at that. Thanks very much for helping us understand. Colm McKenna, owner of Texco Service Station, he's made that tough decision to close. At its peak, 50 employees. So, you know, that's 50 people paying loans and mortgages and their student fees and all that type of stuff. That employer is gone now. General loss for the local economy, of course, because one business helps another business and all that kind of stuff. But, I mean, he's decommissioning at a cost of over 100 grand and doing so after suffering losses of over six figures last year. So that means in excess of 100,000 euro. But Colm just prepared to say in excess of six figures. Well, sorry, in losses over six figures, and has made the decision. It's astonishing, isn't it, to have to spend an additional 100,000 euro to close a business that was already losing in excess of 100,000 euro. But here we are. Any other people in that industry that want to comment on that? The details, 086 60 25,000, WhatsApps and texts, or give us a call on 074 91 25,000. Why is the works on Navaney Street in Ballybuffet to be completed taking longer than 12 weeks? That was allocated to the job. Curbs so high, you can't get your car door opened. Oh, come here. If anyone's... is there another layer of street to go on top of the street that's there? Surely there must be. They can't have curbs so high, you can't open your car door. Give us a... If you're down there, make a short video, send it on to us. Hi, Greg. Just wondering if anyone had issues with the ticketing for the Ulster final on Saturday. We had four Donegal season tickets, yet we were in along with Fermanagh supporters and not another Donegal supporter in sight. How difficult is it to keep Donegal season ticket holders together, or is this something too difficult to ask from the GAA? Interesting. Interesting. And listen, thankfully we're not at the stage that you might see in, or historically, at soccer matches. But there was quite a bit of aggro yesterday. Louth and Meath, and you kind of wouldn't want to be in the middle of it if you were there with a family. So I don't know what the story is. Maybe someone out there knows, and I'm sure they do. This caller had four Donegal season tickets, but they were in amongst Armagh fans, which even if there were no... Even if... I know most of the time there's a lot of good banter and crack in the terraces, but at the same time, you know, you'd probably... Better to you prefer to be in with your own supporters. Massive congratulations to Oisin and all the commentary. Absolutely fantastic. The last 30 seconds were heart pumping, and massive congratulations to our team. They should be so proud. Sunny days in Clonus are fantastic. Credit to Armagh too. Also a fantastic performance. Armagh played brilliant, and they didn't give up. But you know, is that the Jim McGuinness factor? Able to make the right decisions to get the team over the line. Such disgraceful behaviour at the Ulster final. The fighting happening in this day and age, people should know better. Yeah, that's towards the end of it. I don't want to focus too much on it unless you just want to talk about it. You know, I think the Donegal goalie was goaded a bit towards the end of normal time. There was a bit of goading from the Donegal players towards, at least one anyway, towards the Armagh bench. That's fine. You know, who hasn't won a game of pool or darts and screamed yes in your opponent's face? Doesn't mean you're going to get lamped. So I think, you know, people are entitled to celebrate. I think the response has to be proportionate, though. That being said, does it set a tone then for fans travelling home? They bump into each other in a business and continue the argy-bargy off the pitch. There is a responsibility to players, I think, to sort of demonstrate proper behaviour to young, impressionable fans, particularly young lads, I think it seems. Congratulations to Jim and the boys on their win. However, the Guardian stewards did a bad job. Nobody should have been allowed on the pitch. This could have been a stampede. This could have been dangerous. I think we're getting to the point whereby encroaching onto the pitch is going to become a finable offence for the host ground or something, because Saturday and even potentially Sunday, but certainly Saturday, between the jigs and the reels, could have got very bad. You know, there's very young kids are out there as well, and it's going to take, or sorry, it shouldn't take something bad to happen before they control that. And my concern is one of two things are going to happen. A, they, as you know, it's such a traditional thing to go out in the pitch, and I'm not saying, I'm not being a fuddy-duddy, but two things are going to happen. One, they're going to have to sort of manage that now, or two, they're going to end up managing it after someone is trampled and something very seriously happens. That's the two options. Either way, it's going to end up whereby they're going to do more to control the crowds and the encroachments onto the pitch. It's either now to prevent something happening, or B, in reaction to something happening. In the health board car park in Bala Buffet, Northern drivers are asking what coins it accepts. They only have sterling. I've had to give so many people money. I've had to give 10 different people coins as they didn't have the right change. I propose that a machine should be in the car park to change sterling coins to euros. Is there not a digital option, though? Can you not tap, or can you not book your ticket online as well? I mean, these are fully grown adults as well. I mean, if those two options are there to create machines that also accept sterling, you know what I mean? At whose expense? Ours. In relation to the Health Board car park, does it have tap facilities, or does it have an option to book your ticket using an app? If it does have one or both of those, I'd be not inclined to put in dual coinage machines. But anyway, that's just my 2 cents, or sterling or euro for that matter. Right, just before our next break, I want to mention St. Union's College student pilgrimage to Medjugorje. It's in September 2025, and to support Dr. Damien Nijad hosting that pilgrimage, there's a big bake sale with a great selection of cakes for a great cause. Look out for the coffee tent, and don't forget some cash to buy your lovely goodies. It's after all masses this weekend coming, which is, for me, next weekend. This weekend's the one that just passed. But anyway, next weekend, Saturday the 17th, the Vigil Mass, on Sunday 18th of May, outside St. Eugene's Cathedral. Bring some change, enough for the plate, and to get along to the big bake sale. And the money that they're raising will support Dr. Damien Nijad hosting the St. Union's College student pilgrimage to Medjugorje in September of 2025. Now, I'm joined in studio by John Richard from India, but living in Donegal for 15 years now. John, good morning to you.
Good morning, Greg. How are you?
Thank you very much for joining us. And you are not long back from the Vatican.
Yeah, last night. Yeah, I came last night.
What an amazing experience. Okay, so take us back to how you ended up there, because a lot of people we've spoken to, following the death of Pope Francis and, of course, the election of Pope Leo, were there by accident, effectively. It was a coincidence of timing. Lots of us travel to Rome or the Vatican. I haven't, but lots do. But, John, you had applied to be there. So talk to me about that process.
Yeah, actually, this year being announced as a jubilee year by Pope Francis, I have applied for the volunteer last year, August, and my application got approved in November. They took almost like 3 months to review my application, my background, and my faith, all those things.
And so they go to a lot of effort to screen, screen sounds like the wrong word, but to select the volunteers.
Correct, yeah. That would be a lot of applications. You know, they have selected about 7,000 applicants to be a volunteer across the globe. So I'm fortunate to be one among them. So during my batch, you know, I opted to go for 1 week. We had about 85, 90 volunteers from 30 plus countries, plus, Italian volunteers, you know, with more numbers.
And the volunteers travel to the Vatican all of the time, or are volunteers selected for, particular events? Like, were you due to be in Rome between the 2nd and 10th of May, or were you called to be in Rome?
No, I selected that, you know.
Okay.
When I applied for that, I selected for 2nd and 10th of May. Reason being, the weather would be good in Rome. You know, last time I was in June or July, that was very hot. So I thought May would be better for me. And for Gillespie, he provided me input as well. You know, maybe that would be the right time for me to be in Rome. So
your role when you arrived, so you arrive on May 2nd, and your role from there is as a volunteer. What are you tasked to do?
See, I arrived on 2nd May. My duty started from 3rd May. So it's more of like assisting the pilgrims from the different countries, basically, you know, English-speaking people. So mostly the Italian volunteers, they would struggle in English, or I would be able to provide information to the pilgrims, guide them, you know, support them, you know, go through the holy door, taking them around the basilica, you know, if they ask any questions about the basilica, explain them. No, those are the main tasks for us, you know. And also sometimes we do crowd control with the local Italian police if there is a huge crowd. You know, being a jubilee year, we could see easily about 10,000 people every day. Mm. Sometimes it goes beyond 20,000-25,000. So it's such a time we have to manage the crowd as well.
So in terms of your knowledge of, you know, the pilgrim experience or being able to answer questions about this basilica, for an example, were you tested on that knowledge? Is that part of the volunteer selection process?
Not really. So
you're not bluffing it though, right?
No, definitely not. You know, so I like history. Yes. I like archaeology. So I did, you know, enough study on Vatican. If you ask anything about the Basilica,
you know,
I know. For example, if you ask about the Ciborium, you know, the altar, the large bronze setup. I have
the knowledge.
So it's like...
Well, here, I don't have the knowledge to even ask you a question of any significance, but answer this. What is, from your perspective, what is the most interesting thing about the Basilica, or an interesting fact, something that you've discovered in your research that is you find the most interesting?
Yeah, see, everyone knows that, you know, Peter's Basilica is the largest churches in the world. And one of the it is the largest basilica in the world. It could accommodate easily about 60,000 people one time.
Inside.
So it has many altars inside. We have to consider some treasures. The first thing is people would like to know about the Pietà, right? So the statue made by Michelangelo, then, you know, the Ciborium, the bronze structure, which is about 24 meter high, 90 feet high, made of bronze, and it's one of the largest bronze structure in the world. Mm. Also, you could see the altar, which consists the chair of Peter. You know, that is also one of the treasures, and also the memorial of Saint Peter, which is underneath of the you know, the main altar. So these are all some important factors that we have to understand when we are going in. You know, definitely people can see the huge structure with a lot of paintings done by Michelangelo in the main dome, and also they have to understand there are huge number of structures available in Vatican.
Yeah, I find it fascinating. What I find very interesting when you go to places like that, and I haven't been there, but I've been to other places, that names, you know, like Michelangelo or others, that seem to be just names on a piece of paper, that in some way you're connected because, you know, you're close to the work that they've, you know, they've done. You are stepping into the history as such, you know what I mean? It's like frozen there. And it takes these names off a piece of paper and brings them into present, which is quite remarkable. So when you arrived, did you realize then that you would have, that you wouldn't have known that the tone of people's visits would be different in the context of Pope Francis's death, if you know what I mean? They were already scheduled, but it becomes different too because we're then awaiting the formation of a conclave and the election of a new pope. So that this week, even though you're probably doing some of the same duties, there's a different sort of importance to it almost.
Absolutely. You know, initially, you know, we were given, you know, like assisting the pilgrims. And also, you know, if you look at, there are a lot of encounters. Let's say if people are coming from USA, sometimes, you know, they come and tell that, you know, I did not go to church maybe since since 20 years, 30 years, this is the first time I'm entering into the church. While looking at the Vatican, I feel that I missed something. So I have to come back to the faith, and I have to attend the Mass and all. You know, they give a lot of experiences, personal experience. That was a huge encounter for us as a volunteer. That is a new experience for us. When talk about the conclave and all, you know, initially we gave like assisting the pilgrims, you know, when in the conclave was planned, you know, our schedule was slightly tuned up, like, you know, because we expect that huge crowd would come. You know, the first day, you know, after the conclave, the Wednesday, people saw smoke, you know, black smoke at 9 o'clock. They were disappointed.
How would you describe the atmosphere in St. Peter's Square? Because you had a fantastic position there as well. Like, because, you know, if you're listening to, it's like any large crowd, right? You hear the murmurs and what have you. And then on the top of each hour, there seemed to be, I don't know if they were applauding and clapping with the hope of news, but it seemed to be, particularly at the top of the hour, excitement built. What did you get a sense of what was happening, particularly on the first night?
You know, people came with huge expectation that, you know, we might hear the election of the new Pope, but it was not. But, you know, they just go back. The next day also, you know, we were presented in the square. You know, the news supposed to, you know, the result is supposed to come at 10:30. It was a bit delayed until 12 o'clock. People with a huge expectation, they were staying there. They would see that maybe since it is delayed, we might...
What's going on? Yeah, exactly.
And that also, you know, black smoke and people return back. Some people I have seen that they have stayed back.
How clear is the chimney stack from the square? Or were people observing on monitors?
Sorry, I don't get the question.
You know the chimney from which the smoke comes. How visible is it with the naked eye from the square, or were people relying on monitors?
No. We can look at through our eyes. You know,
the seagulls.
It's about maybe 50 to 20 meters.
The seagulls had a better view because they were popping in and out all of the time. Well, fast forward to the white smoke. It was 6:08 Italian time, 5:08 here. Again, was that in itself a very unique experience to be present? And what did you feel, or what did the crowd feel?
Absolutely, that was a unique experience. You know, people were in joy. You know, you can see a lot of shouting. You know, like "Viva Papa, Viva Papa," and also I could see people are broken down. You know, with tears. Like, you know, it's a joy tear, I would say. I could see, you know, some of our volunteers from Latin American countries, they are literally crying. And it's totally emotional situation, I would say. For myself itself, it's a unique experience. I thought, you know, I'm blessed. I never expected that could happen in my life. You know, it's one...
But it's funny how it plays out, because even the TV crews didn't know what was going on to some extent. So doors open, the cardinals come out, and then doors open and another person comes out and people are like, is that the Pope? And it's like, who is he? And then the Pope himself, Pope Leo, comes out, didn't speak in English, spoke in Latin and Italian, Latin. I believe, or Spanish, was it?
Latin.
Do you think the crowd knew who this was, or are they all figuring it out the same as we at home are, that this is Roberto Prevost?
Yeah, you know, initially when the Pope Dominic Mabertino, you know, that's what I feel, you know, the name, you know, Cardinal, he came and announced, you know, Habebus Papam, you know, like, you know, we have the new Pope. And people are looking at the name. I couldn't recognize the name when he said, you know. Mm-hmm. And
I heard Roberto and that was it. That's all I heard. Yeah,
yeah, right. Robert Francis Cardinal Prevost, you know, that was his name. And when he announced, we could not hear that name because people are having different names in their list, like, you know, with the media's, you know, work and all, you know, different names. And when we heard that name, nobody were not able to connect the name. And then a person near to my, you know, the volunteer, he put the, you know, Google chat and come back and say that this is the person. Wow.
They didn't have that in the 17th century.
Right, yeah.
Stay there a moment. Shane McCrudden and Sinead Dugan, they were in Rome on honeymoon And as it turned out, they were there for the election of Pope Leo the 14th. Well, firstly, congratulations to you and Sinead Shane on your nuptials. And what an interesting story. Well, firstly, what an interesting experience. But what an interesting story to relate that you were there for the election of Pope Leo the 14th.
Yeah, it was amazing. Greg, and good morning to you and your listeners. Yeah, we got married Saturday week last, and St. Mary's of the Visitation Church in Killybegs, Father Colm Galler married us. And Sinead was talking to me a couple of days before. She says, like, what will we do for the honeymoon? And I says, well, I'm not too pushed on going too far. Like, I just like...
Typical Donegal man, Shane.
I know.
We'll head to Bundoran.
We'll head to Bundoran for the weekend. But I says, like, you know, and I've travelled the country quite a bit, in fairness, just through work and through just stuff and things. And I said, you know what, we'll go to Waterford maybe, because it's one of the counties I've never really stopped in. And I was in Dungarvan for the first time in my life there a couple of weeks ago. And I said, you know, we'll stop there. But that was all set in stone anyway. We're going there for 3 nights. And then when I left from my home house in Ballyara outside Killybegs there for the wedding, Sinead left a letter or like a card for me for the morning of the wedding. And I was reading it, and in brackets it was, by the way, we're not going to Waterford, we're going to Rome. And I was kind of reading it going, ah, that's... She's obviously taking a hand of me here. Like, mm-hmm. So when we got as far as the chapel that morning, she came up and her father, Bernard, handed her over to me. I said to her, like, are you being serious with Rome? She says, oh, yeah, we're going. So couldn't believe it. And obviously my head changed then. I know they were going to go to Conclave from Tuesday, was it, or Wednesday? I know they were starting the day before we were arriving. And I said, this is going to be just unreal. Like, and hopefully the last couple of conclaves happen fairly quick, you know. And someone joked to us, says, well, hopefully it's not like the one in, I think it was the 10th century or something, that lasted for 3 years. So I says, no, we're not going to hang around Rome for 3 years waiting on a pope. But no, it was, we went into the Vatican, we've seen the first black smoke, and yeah, it was, the chimney was perfectly clear. Like, it's a very small one, but it's prominent, but it's small. And we've seen the black smoke. So, but we're beside, like, there was priests and nuns and clergy everywhere, and there was a very, very tall man, a priest, behind us, and I just said hello to him. And Father Joe was his name, from Mexico, and we were telling him we got married, and he was congratulating, and he blessed us and all that. And then he goes, he's going to stay about. And he says, what do you think? He says, I would be staying about for the next one. So we went back out, and we got about to eat just outside the Vatican, outside the walls, and we came back in. And yeah, about, say, 2.5-3 hours later, and the smoke started to come out, and like, it was surreal. The bells that rang in St. Peter's Basilica, like, they can be heard all over Rome. Like, it was some experience. Emotional, I'll be straight up with you. It was just, and whether you're a person of strong faith or not, like, the experience, I would recommend it to anybody. Like, and we were inside St. Peter's Basilica before that morning, like, and couldn't get over it at all, like, the vastness of it.
Would you describe, Shane, the mood in the crowd as when you're there? Because, you know, we've been to football matches, right? Or people have been to concerts, or, you know, other places where there's big gatherings of people. And this is, you know, thousands upon thousands of people standing there, literally waiting on black or white smoke. Is everyone chatting to each other? Are people in prayer? What's it like being in the crowd?
It's probably a combination of nearly everything you just said there. Yeah, there is people praying. There's a lot of people holding rosary beads. There was a lot of nuns that were, I'm assuming they were reciting the rosary. They had all the beads in their hand. There was a lot of young priests, which I was shocked at, because we don't have too many young priests, it's like, left in Ireland. But it was amazing to see the amount of young priests, like, from all over the world, from you name the country, they were there. And, like, they were excited. I remember there was actually 5 in particular priests in front of us, and they were sitting down, and, like, they were taking selfies with each other, and they were, like, one of them, I just happened to glance. I wasn't being nosy, but they were flat out on Twitter, and I was there going, Jesus, like, this is like their Christmas morning for them. There was other people, like, just standing in silence. There was couples hugging, kissing, and everybody's glued to the chimney. Now, there was 4 monitors there, and incredibly high quality monitors, and, like, everybody's glued to it. And like, you, every so often I would be talking to Sinead or just looking around me, and then I would find myself glancing back to the screen or looking up at the Chamberlain. And yeah, the mood was just, it was pure anticipation. Like, and then when the Cardinal came out to announce that the Pope after smoking the bells, and the Cardinal came out, and my Latin isn't great now, so I had to rely on the reaction of people around me. And I didn't want to be asking anybody in the middle of the celebration of, oh, who is it? And do anybody know his name? So, but I did see a group of maybe about 6 or 7 American priests. And once the Latin was said, now looking back, they obviously knew their Latin and they heard the Cardinal Prevost. And then they took the name Leo. And I said to Sinead, I said, Jesus, this man could actually be American, maybe, or possibly maybe from South America. Which, and so was in the sense that
kind of both, right?
But like, they literally, the priest was jumping with joy, like literally in front of us, like, and his collar and his black suit, and that, like, it was just
and Shane, unreal. Did it move you on any level you didn't expect it to? Like, was it an amazing experience and a wonderful thing to be a part of and a wonderful thing to share with Sinead? But did it move you beyond that? Not that that's not enough, if you know what I mean, but just in terms of maybe a spiritual sense or...
Maybe, yeah, partially, yeah. Like, I do go to Mass as much as I can. Like, I'm not there every week. Like, when... maybe once every 2 weeks, or I go as much as I can. Like, and I've started taking Rosie's daughter to Mass and that, and
yeah,
before we got married, and that, just to, for her to experience. And like, Killybegs Chapel, Father Colum does a great thing there every twice a month there, in the sense that he does like the children's Mass, so that the children have their own Mass.
Oh, brilliant! Fair play to
once,
them.
To one,
yeah.
Aye, so he takes them, and like, there's a couple of volunteers in Killybegs that does the kind of children's Mass for them.
Yeah, I think I'd love to see that more, because a lot of us are sort of, you don't want to be disruptive, like, because you hear then of people being given out for kids making noises.
So I'm experiencing that, but like, I suppose it moved me a wee bit, just to be in the thick of it, like, to actually see, like, somebody says, like, he's now the leader of 1.4 billion Catholics in the world. Like, and it moved him. It moved Leo the 14th. Like, you could see it in him. Like,
thrust upon them, really, I suppose. No one goes in there expecting it. They take a moment, I think, to reflect on it. But it's a huge change. I mean, you're asked if you want it. Shane, listen, thank you for sharing your experience with us. Lots of love to you and Sinead and the family for a long and happy life together. It's amazing, isn't it? It's amazing the individual experiences that people have, John. You've got your experience. We've just heard from Shane. And then I suppose then very quickly the crowd disperses and you have a role in that. And as quickly as they came, they depart, and all passing off smoothly, I presume. The crowd leaving after the Pope is elected.
Yeah, actually, that is also another amazing experience. I wanted to talk about another experience, Greg. The flags,
yes,
the crowd had, you could see almost like all the countries' flag around. That makes us to feel that Pope is really a global leader, right?
Yeah,
like 1.4 billion people, leading 1.4 billion Catholics, and you are looking at huge crowd with many number of flags. You could see all the flags, including Ireland, India, Argentina, Brazil. I couldn't see Peru for the first time, but later, people waved off.
Someone ran off and bought one.
right. That is also amazing experience, that...
There's a unity there and an equalization, isn't there?
Absolutely.
Because, with the way the world is now, there seems to be so much division, and we hope we don't see more of it. But then you have one thing that's incredibly unifying.
Absolutely.
And it's just of the people. It's not of the leaders. It's not of, it's the people.
Right.
John, it's been lovely chatting to you. Thank you so very much indeed. Now, are you a volunteer, like, all of the time now? So next year, the year after, once you are selected, how does that work?
No. Let's say, the Jubilee year usually comes in once in 25 years.
So specific for the Jubilee year.
Yeah,
okay,
specific for Jubilee year. Let's see. I would love to go back, for sure. Yeah, I have to apply again. And if my application get accepted, then definitely.
Yeah, well, I'm sure you're in an advantage with your experience.
Right.
It's been lovely having you in. Glad you got home safe. Thanks so much for chatting to us and sharing your experiences.
Thank you, Greg.
It's been lovely.
All the best. Yeah, thank you so much.
Thank you. That's John Richard from India, living in Donegal for 15 years. He happened to apply to be a volunteer in the Jubilee year and then ended up in Rome in the Vatican for the election of Pope Leo. And we chatted to Shane as well. Another Donegal man, Shane McCrotton, who married his wife Sinead. She sprung upon him to go on honeymoon, and they just happened to be there for the election of the new Pope as well. Remarkable stories. The ticket machine in Ballybuffet doesn't take tap, and you have to download the council parking app. Okay, well, that's that they need to put in a solution for those visiting the area with sterling coins only then. When is the breast check unit moving from Letterkenny to Donegal Town? My mother had to spend €80 on a taxi to Letterkenny as nobody could drive her. Not good. Not a good experience. I'm not sure of the ins and outs of that. We will, of course, as always, track that information down. Hi, Greg. Was at the final on Saturday, and it appeared to me that Armagh had received a much larger allocation of tickets than Donegal, despite we being a bigger county. I'm not sure what the situation is there in terms of the exact breakdown. I do know there seem to be plenty of tickets knocking about. There seem to be plenty of tickets knocking about on Friday and Saturday. People either with season tickets that didn't go or applied for too many tickets and didn't need them. Greg, ridiculous for you to say that it's okay to go to opposition after such a tight contest on Saturday. Well, I'm sorry. It's literally just an opinion. I'm not saying it's right to goad, but, you know, after such an intense battle, to sort of shake your fists in celebration, you know, and I don't mean shake your fists as you were as if you were squaring up to someone, but to celebrate the amount of effort that went into that, especially given the fact that at least the Donegal goalkeeper was on the back of goading towards the end of normal time. But this caller says it's pathetic behaviour and one you would give out to children for. Players shouldn't be good winners, or should be good winners as well as gracious in defeat. A player who celebrates in such a way in front of a losing bench deserves all he gets. Brian in Letterkenny thinks that if you celebrate too robustly, you are entitled to get a punch in the face. Okay, Brian, I mean, I see the two things as very differently, but I also see your point, and I accept your point. Rios to final aftermath. Will there be any action punishment regarding four Armagh players attacking the one Donegal player? Well, I hope not. You know, really, I really do hope not. Oh, and who am I? Maybe the Donegal player in question really does. But, you know, there was a lot of tension. It was a big, big game. It meant so much to Armagh. It meant so much to Donegal. It meant so much to the fans in attendance. Yes, there was an over-celebration. Yes, there was a reaction. If no one is injured or hurt, would we not be better at drawing a line under it? Let Armagh go full strength into the next stage of the competition. That would, you know, I'm not saying the right things today, but I don't say the right thing. I say what I feel. So we'll see. What do you think? Would you like to see any further? Would you like to see any further punishment? Rita says, the achievement of Paul Doherty from Carn Donagh deserves a mention. Paul ran the Inishowen 100 plus 4 miles, 104 miles in total, over 25 hours as part of Darkness into Light for Pieta. He started in Carn Donagh at 6 p.m. on Friday and finished at 7 p.m. on Saturday. He took a few 10-minute comfort stops, as you would have to. He was supported by three friends in a camper van and others. He gathered a sizable amount for charity. His personal endurance is outstanding, remarkable. It seems almost impossible that humans are capable of running 100 miles, in fact, 104 miles in 25 hours. He did it all for a good cause. And the last figure I saw that he had raised was in excess of €15,000. Now, maybe it's more now, but it was around 15,000 15,720 or something. So well done, Paul. A fantastic personal achievement, because that is really quite remarkable, but also doing it for a cause that's important to you.